As a father, teacher, and full-time student, my life is fueled by coffee. But not just any coffee. Onyx Coffee Lab is not only delicious, but they are serious about finding the very best beans, sourcing them ethically, and producing their coffee as sustainably as possible. After searching the globe to find the very best beans, they roast them every weekday using solar power from the roof of their facilities. Onyx Coffee Lab also believes in being as transparent as possible about their pricing and sourcing information. For example, you can get 10 ounces of their gorgeous cold brew for $16. That 10 ounces will make you 32 cups of incredible coffee. That breaks down to just over 50 cents per cup. Onyx Coffee Lab recently sent me some of their classic Southern Weather roast as well as their cold brew roast, and it was some of the best coffee I have ever had. And I have had a lot of coffee. Follow the link in my show notes to get award-winning coffee from Onyx Coffee Lab today. Recently, Obscure History was featured on History Daily, a very popular history podcast. I am forever grateful for that opportunity. The episode that was featured was the third episode of Obscure History on the 1904 Olympic Marathon, and throughout the process of arranging that deal, I listened back to that episode quite a few times, and there was one story that felt as if it were unresolved. I've never done this before, but today we are revisiting the 1904 Olympic Marathon. We've got unfinished business. My name is Josh, and this is Obscure History. The 1904 Olympic Marathon was supremely disastrous. The man who organized the race had no idea what he was doing. The conditions were so hazardous that the race was nearly impossible to even complete. There was cheating, lying, theft, and drug use during the race. And the winner nearly died after being carried across the finish line by his trainers. It was, by all accounts, a complete and total failure. Now, covering such a chaotic event is pretty easy for me. It's got drama, intrigue, disaster, and humor, all of the things that you need to tell a compelling story. It also had plenty of interesting characters, from the American team that was mostly made up of mailmen and factory workers, to the South African war veterans who broke the color barrier of the modern Olympic Games and became the first Black African competitors. In my opinion, the people involved in this infamous event are even more interesting than the event itself. And perhaps the most interesting of the competitors was the representative from Cuba, Andorin Carvajal. You may recall from that episode that he ran a very unique race, but moreover, he lived a very unique life. Félix de la Caridad Carvajal y Soto was born in San Antonio de los Baños, Cuba, in 1875. Though very little is known about his childhood, there are a few things that can be noted. First, we can say with some confidence that he was born into abject poverty, where he would remain for his entire life. Second, we can say with some confidence that he was an active boy from the very beginning. The name Andorin was not his legal name, but was rather a given name to reflect his behavior, always moving. And third, we know that he was a war veteran. The Cuban War for Independence is often glossed over in the social studies curriculum for American students, despite being a deeply interesting and unexpectedly American event. In much the same way that the United States had its own war of independence against Britain, Cuba had a war for independence against Spain. In fact, the Cuban War for Independence was actually the third and final round in a fight that spanned decades and included two other wars, those being the Ten Years' War and the Little War. Normally, I don't do this, but because Cuba's struggle for independence is a neglected portion in my own historical education, I have found a brief but comprehensive summary of their struggle in an Encyclopedia Britannica article edited by Jeff Wallenfeld. Dissatisfied with the corrupt and inefficient Spanish administration, lack of political representation, and high taxes, Cubans in the eastern provinces united under the wealthy planter Carlos Manuel de Céspedes, whose Declaration of Independence in October 1868, the Grito de Yara, signaled the beginning of the Ten Years' War, in which 200,000 lives were lost. Céspedes had the support of some landowners whose main interest was economic and political independence from Spain, whereas the farmers and laborers were more concerned with the immediate abolition of slavery and greater political power for the common man. In 1876, Spain sent General Arsenio Martinez Campos to crush the revolution. Lacking organization and significant outside support, the rebels agreed to an armistice in February of 1878, the terms of which promised amnesty and political reform. A second uprising, La Guerrilla Chiquita, engineered by Calixto Garcia, began in August of 1879, but was quelled by superior Spanish forces in autumn of 1880. Spain gave Cuba representation in the Cortes, the parliament, and abolished slavery in 1886. Other promised reforms, however, never materialized. In 1894, Spain canceled a trade pact between Cuba and the United States. The imposition of more taxes and trade restrictions prodded the economically distressed Cubans in 1895 to launch the Cuban War of Independence, a resumption of the earlier struggle. Poet and journalist José Julián Martí, the ideological spokesman of the revolution, drew up plans for an invasion of Cuba while living in exile in New York City. Máximo Gómez y Báez, who had commanded the rebel group during the Ten Years' War, was among those who joined Martí's invasion force. Although Martí was killed and martyred in battle about 1 month after the initiation of the invasion, on April 11, 1895, Gómez and Antonio Maceo employed sophisticated guerrilla tactics in leading the Revolutionary Army to take control of the eastern region. In September 1895, they declared the Republic of Cuba and sent Maceo's forces to invade the western provinces. By January 1896, rebel forces controlled most of the island, and the Spanish government replaced Martinez Campos with a general who would be known as the Butcher. In order to deprive the revolutionaries on the rural support in which they depended, the Butcher instituted a brutal program of reconcentration, forcing hundreds of thousands of Cubans into camps in the towns and cities where they died of starvation and disease by the tens of thousands. In 1897, Spain recalled the Butcher and offered home rule to Cuba, and the next year it ordered the end of reconcentration. In the meantime, the rebels continued to control most of the countryside. Perhaps more important, they won the sympathy of the vast majority of Cuban people to their cause. Moreover, news of Spanish atrocities and tales of rebel bravery were splashed in the yellow journalism headlines of William Randolph Hearst's New York Journal, which beat the drums of war. Now, that was a lot of information, but it actually helps us to understand the life and athletic ability of Andorin Carvajal. During the war, when the rebels occupied the countryside and had their forces spread about, they needed to deliver messages to each other, and their primary method of delivering messages were day runners. These soldiers pushed the limits of what was thought to be humanly possible. It is said that during the war, he would run 30 miles per day, every day, delivering important messages to Cuban revolutionaries. In fact, his ability to run vast distances in a short amount of time made him a well-known figure to all the wrong people. After catching wind that the Spanish army had learned his identity and were preparing to hunt him down, Andorin Carvajal hopped on a ship and fled to Florida, where extended family welcomed him into their homes. Shockingly, this is merely the beginning of Andrin Carvajal's unbelievable life. But before we get to the rest of his story, we need to run over to an ad break to pay our bills. I admit, that was a reach even for me. If you want ad-free episodes with bonus content, hit that subscribe button on Apple Podcasts. For everyone else, there is a free Discord server. I will link to it in my show notes. Come join us as we talk about history, education, and share our best and worst history memes. Did I mention it's completely free? After the Cuban War for Independence had ended, Andrin Carvajal returned to his home country where he picked up a variety of jobs. Postman, handyman, errand boy, and even bellhop at an upscale hotel in Havana. Though he was trying his hardest to scratch out a meager existence working as many jobs as he could juggle, he was still passionate about running and did so as often as possible. So when word that the Olympic Games were to be held in St. Louis made its way to Cuba, Andrin Carvajal knew it was his chance to prove himself to the world. The problem was getting to St. Louis. Andrin Carvajal was poor. He wore ragged clothes. He worked menial jobs. He didn't have the means to just pack up and sail to the U.S. Not only was he lacking personal funding for the trip, he also needed to be sponsored by his home country, which proved to be a very tall task. After brainstorming, Andrin Carvajal formed a plan. He had once been so well known for running that the Spanish army had put a bounty on him. He just needed to become well known to the right people, and his problem would be solved. He was confident in his abilities, he just needed somebody important to notice him. He, at first, attempted to gain the attention diplomatically, by seeking a personal meeting with the mayor of Havana, but was laughed out of the office. Not deterred, he thought that maybe the mayor needed to see his abilities firsthand. According to author Liam Boylan Pett, according to lore, Carvajal did the only thing that he knew. He began to run, lap after lap, around the Plaza de Armas. The 5'3" 120-pound runner ran circles around City Hall, jogging past the mayor's window time after time. He ran the entire day. A crowd began to watch this sweat-soaked runner plod around the park, lap after lap. At the end of the workday, the mayor came out to a throng of people. Once again, Carvajal ran by. The mayor returned to his office and wrote up an order. He returned outside and stopped Carvajal. "Here is an order for your transportation to St. Louis. Now go and do your best." And his best he would do. Sort of. He was sent off to the 1904 Olympic Games with a wallet full of public funds, but after arriving in New Orleans, both Carvajal and his money disappeared. At least, briefly. We don't have solid records of what happened during his time in New Orleans, but there is plenty of speculation. Some accounts suggest that he was robbed and had to make enough money to travel to St. Louis on his own. Some accounts suggest that he simply gambled away his funding. We really aren't sure what is true, aside from the fact that it took him longer than intended to make it to St. Louis, and that he essentially hitchhiked there. Hungry, dirty, penniless, and as one writer of the day recalled, the ends of his heavy black mustache sticking out in an aggressive angle looked both picturesque and pathetic. To this point, Andrin Carvajal's life had been extremely eventful and unique, and his performance in the 1904 marathon was no different. He stole food from spectators, ate rotten food off the ground, became violently ill, took a nap, woke up, and still finished fourth overall. It was a genuinely incredible effort, and all in some of the worst race conditions imaginable. What we didn't really get into in the 1904 Olympic marathon episode is that after the race, Carvajal became a little bit of a celebrity. It was said that he would give grandiloquent toasts to his homeland in poetic Spanish at athletic banquets. He even joined a local athletic club in St. Louis where he ran in some small races to make money to get back to Cuba, which he eventually did do. Once he returned to Cuba, he was showered with attention. He had finally gotten all the recognition he had sought. And in what seems like a sort of poetic callback to his days running around City Hall trying to raise awareness for his cause, reports suggest that as a way to bolster support for himself going into the 1906 Olympics in Athens, Andrón Carvajal ran the entire length of Cuba twice. And much like his last attempt to gain support of the public, he was successful. Once again, he was sent off to run an Olympic marathon, sent off to represent his nation, which was, for the first time in decades, breathing liberated air without slavery or Spanish rule. It was a great time to be Andrón Carvajal. But just as his old gimmicks worked, so too did his personal demons. After arriving in Italy, Andrón Carvajal vanished. He never made it to the games, and his wallet full of public funding disappeared forever. In fact, he was gone for so long that the press supposed him dead, and a full obituary ran. However, Carvajal would not stay dead. He returned to Cuba on a Spanish ship later in 1907, and despite what you may expect, his return was lauded with limited fanfare. Perhaps his repeating offense of traveling abroad with public funds only to disappear and lose all of the public funds had worn down his welcome with the fine people of Cuba. And just as he always had, Andrón Carvajal simply moved on with his life. He continued running and actually took his abilities to the big leagues and became a professional, international runner, which disqualified him from future Olympic endeavors. Though he would never compete in an Olympic marathon again, Andrón Carvajal did compete in and win many professional races until he was well into his middle age. Though he was able to maintain relevance as an athlete, he could never capitalize on his success financially. In fact, according to a translated article from EcuRed, a Cuban online encyclopedia, at the end of the 1940s, Carvajal, then 70 years old, said goodbye to his public as an athlete. While at a baseball game that was being held at Cerro Stadium, he made a short run. After receiving applause from the crowd, he stated, "This is to show that I still run." In the mediated Republic of Cuba, as in all liberal democracies in Latin America, the state did not support athletes. His trophies and awards disappeared. Among them were the bronze medal he won at the first Missouri Athletic Club Marathon, held on May 6, 1905, and the Great Silver Cup obtained in a marathon held in Madrid, Spain. Félix Carvajal lived the last 20 years of his life in a miserable shack, where he died alone on 27th of January, 1949, at the age of 73 years. There were probably only a handful of people in the entire world that could have even competed with Andrón Carvajal in his lifetime. In him, we see nearly limitless, untapped potential. He could have been one of the most legendary athletes of all time. But because of his vices, he could never really put the pieces together the right way for himself. It seems that sometimes, even if you are the best runner in the world, you can't outrun a tumultuous and impoverished childhood. Thank you so much for listening. I really hope that you enjoyed this episode. If you're new here, maybe you've recently started listening because of a certain feed drop, welcome. I'm glad to have you here. I hope that you enjoy these episodes. Generally speaking, they come out every week. And if you're new here, maybe you ought to know that every episode of Obscure History is brought to you in part by Indie Drop-In Network and Earbuds Podcast Collective. Indie Drop-In Network is kind of like a podcast. You subscribe to it. Every week you get a different podcast featured on their feed. These are all independently produced podcasts. They are all great. You can find it in any podcast player that you listen to, whatever one you're listening to this on, probably. And Earbuds Podcast Collective is a podcast recommendation newsletter sent out by Ariel Nissenblatt, who is a saint in the podcast space. Greg, that runs Indie Drop-In, and Ariel, that runs Earbuds, are two of the best people in the business, and you should absolutely check out their products. They will help you find your second favorite show. To everyone else, check out the free Discord server. It's a fun time, usually, and I hope that you have a very nice week.